Welcome to Legend Lore with Luis and Lauren, where we talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
I'm Luis, and I'm a developer at Paizo working on the Pathfinder Lost Omens line. I've been playing tabletop RPGs for over 15 years, and I've written for dozens of Pathfinder products. I'm also the GM for Valiant, and I write the Monsters Physique blog here on the No Direction Network.
And I'm Lauren, and I've been playing RPGs for almost 20 years. I write the Bend the Knee blog here on No Direction, and you can also watch me play in the Adventurous and Three Ring Adventure podcasts. And this week, we're talking about the Ranger.
And before we get started, we want to mention that although we know a lot about what we're talking about when it comes to Pathfinder, we're not providing any kind of official answers. We're here to offer advice, and you can use that however you like. Remember that the official word from Paizo is the only official ruling out there. But don't forget, it's your game. Do what works best for your table.
Luis, I'm really excited that we finally got to the Ranger. This is one of my all-time favorite classes. And I know that out there in the community, it's not a lot of people's favorite classes because it doesn't immediately feel much more distinct than, say, a fighter or a druid if they just kind of came together and made a little nature-loving martial character, right? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really have a history of being a very strong class either. But Rangers are fun, right? And they're more ubiquitous than we realize, right? Rangers are any characters or any person who is in nature all the time, but they're for like a purpose. Like folks who go out hunting, you know, that's a very ranger activity, you know? Mm-hmm. Hell, we even have like a job. You can be a park ranger. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is a thing, you know?
I feel that even the nature aspect of it, though, it is a very big part of the identity in fantasy. When you think about it, the big thing about Ranger is just kind of like being able to get out and use your knowledge to track things and survive in places where people might not always have the best time. Like, you can be an urban ranger and be very good at navigating the streets and following people through the streets and stuff and knowing how to get in and around the city, and I would still consider you a ranger even if you're not necessarily like going out and living among the trees, right? The nature aspect is important, but I think the survival aspect is really the big thing about it.
I guess maybe that's the thing. Maybe as a ranger, you're just a navigation and survival expert. Maybe that's your niche. But like, those are kind of broad niches. You can do an awful lot with it.
Yeah. And that's probably why it's its own class, because if it was very specific, it'd be an archetype like assassin or medic or something.
That's right. Or alchemist. Oh, wait, that doesn't count. Some common examples would be like, you know, Aragorn was obviously a ranger, and he's what's funny is like the ranger is not a beloved class, but it has spawned some beloved characters like Aragorn. Oh, and yeah. Like Robin Hood. I prefer the fox version of Robin Hood.
Speaking of animals, there's a good buddy of mine, a little raccoon called Ranger Rick, if you've ever heard of him.
I don't know Ranger Rick. Who is that?
Ranger Rick is like a kids themed mascot that is all about, I think if I remember right, when I was in school, you'd get like little Ranger Rick magazines. It'd be like 8-page, like little thin magazines that's like, oh, go out in nature and go find pine cones and do these fun little things. And Ranger Rick was your little mascot guide through that. It's not at all a competitive ranger like Aragorn or Robin Hood. But Ranger Rick was very fun and a name that I remember a lot from being a kid.
Now, one thing that I do think distinctly separates the ranger from, say, a druid is that the ranger is a martial class. Mm-hmm. You are going to be good at whatever you choose to use to hurt people.
Yes, absolutely. In Pathfinder, so it's Rangers are our final class from the core rulebook, so I can go back and kind of talk about everything and how they all line up. So Barbarian is all about damage, when you think about it. Fighter is all about precision and accuracy. They're the highest to hit. Monk is about versatility and utility, getting around. Rogue, I guess, would also be argued that they're damage, but have a lot of skills and versatility as well. And Ranger, I think, is specifically about focusing on one target and absolutely ruining that target's day. They don't necessarily have like the raw damage all the time. They don't necessarily have the raw precision all the time. And any utility and stuff is always focused on your specific target, your prey. So when you take the time to focus on that prey, you get a lot out of the ranger. If you have to fight on multiple fronts at once, you're probably not going to do as great as some of these other classes, but when you can focus on your hunted prey, you're going to do great.
So ranger's more like single target DPS, whereas yes. Barbarian or rogue, they're more of a, oh, let's see what we can get.
Yeah, rangers excel at solo boss fights, for sure.
So I think you're going to have a pretty easy time with this Batman test. Am I right?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, I mentioned the Urban Ranger earlier, and who else would be great at getting around in a city and tracking down his specific targets? I'd say Batman. Batman's good at knowing the city in and out. Batman has knowledge about a large number of things. Batman is very good about learning more about his specific target, and when it comes time to put on the pain, hey, Batman can just focus on the one person and take him out and probably still fight decently against, you know, large groups of people. But he is definitely the type to focus on his target, go for that, and use his immense skills to make the day terrible.
If Batman wants to find the Joker, he's gonna find the Joker.
Exactly. But, I'm sure you'll have a tough time as well with finding how a ranger could be like a Viking.
You know, I think this is one of the strengths of the ranger that people don't, you know, think about. Like, is it's easy to slot it into concepts, right? Like, look at how easy it was to Batman. And Viking, you'll see, this is very easy, right? How do Vikings find a new settlement to go raid and pillage? They send out a scout. Or you think that scout's a rogue? You think that scout's a wizard? No, that scout's a ranger, right? Easy.
Vikings probably also use their ranger skills to know which mushrooms to eat to help them in battle.
Okay, have I talked about that on this show yet?
No.
Okay, so I have a list of like 20 or 30 builds on my phone, and of course, I recently changed them all from having names to just having like just what the build is. But one of them never had a build name. One of them was always just Historic Berserker. And I think it's a Mauler Alchemist, because what the Berserkers used to do is they would take these psychedelic mushrooms, just tons of them, just an insane amount of psychedelic mushrooms, and then they would save their urine. And they would drink that urine before battle to go into their, you know, their animal frenzies.
Their urine, which is now laced with the psychedelic properties of the mushrooms they ate previously.
That a ranger might have found for them.
Of course. I'm glad the ranger Viking is helping these other Vikings enjoy enjoy the mushrooms.
And now that is something you know. So let's talk about rangers specifically in the Pathfinder 2nd Edition mechanics.
Yes, rangers are, as you mentioned, martial focus class. Not necessarily all about combat, but they're very combat focused. They get their choice of a key ability score between either strength or dexterity. Do you want to go raw damage or do you want to go precision and agility? Very good for bows, very good for axes, whatever you want. They get 10 plus their constitution in hit points every level. And they are exceptional at perception. They begin as experts in perception, and as time goes on, are one of the few classes that make it all the way up to legendary in perception.
You are going to be an expert in fortitude and reflex, so you're just trained in will. You get trained in nature and survival automatically, and you also get a number of additional trained skills equal to 4 plus your intelligence modifier. You have more skills than a fighter, even though you have the same hit points.
You begin trained in simple, martial, and unarmed attacks, and you're trained in light armor, medium armor, and unarmored defense, and of course, you're trained in your ranger class DC.
One of the core features of the ranger, all rangers have it, is your hunt prey. This lets you designate a single target to be your hunted prey. And then you get a bonus to use perception to find them. You get a bonus for survival checks to track them. They're going to have a hard time getting away. But I think what more people are going to be excited about is you can also pick a particular hunter's edge to give you another advantage, another one-up over your hunted prey.
Yeah, you get your choice of three hunter's edges, excuse me, at the moment. I don't think there's anything else outside of the core rulebook. The choice is kind of locked in at first level, so once you pick your hunter's edge, you're stuck with it. First one is flurry, which is all about minimizing your inaccuracy when it comes to multiple attacks. So normally if you make several attacks in a turn, your first attack is at a -5 penalty, and then your third and subsequent attacks are at a -10, or -4 and -8 if you're at with an agile weapon. But here, with your flurry hunter's edge, it instead gets reduced to a -3, and then a -6, rather than a -5 and -10, or if you're fighting with agile weapon, it's -10, -4. So you can keep hitting hard. Well, not necessarily hard, but you can keep hitting constantly with the flurry and take advantage of your minimized penalties on all of this.
With flurry, you can hit them with the wombo combo!
Wombo combo! Happy feet!
If you're not really interested in just flinging ridiculous amount of steel at your opponents, you can also go with the precision edge. Just both flurry and precision. What am I saying? I'm trying to call all of them my favorite. All of them are so cool. With precision, you're not necessarily doing a sneak attack, but it kind of feels like sneak attack. Your first hit against your hunted prey per turn, you get an extra D8 of precision damage. And that keeps going up as you level. At 11, it goes to 2d8. At 19, it goes to 3d8.
The third hunter's edge is outwit, which is all about using your skill and prowess to, of course, outwit your enemies. When you are dealing with your hunted prey, you gain a +2 circumstance bonus to deception, intimidation, and stealth checks, as well as any checks to recall knowledge about them. And also, you gain a +1 circumstance bonus to your AC against your attacks. To attacks from your prey. So this is very good for things like fainting or demoralizing or hiding from your enemies and taking advantage of the bonuses the skills give you.
So you'll get one of these three hunter's edges, and this kind of defines the way you approach your target. But in addition to that, at fifth level, you'll gain trackless step. So you're difficult to track through natural terrain. You basically always have the benefits of cover tracks, even if you're not moving half your speed.
Ninth level, you're going to take advantage of the nature around you. You gain nature's edge if your enemies are in natural, so not magical, difficult terrain or uneven ground, or in difficult terrain that you've created via a snare. I guess not necessarily you, just any snare. They will be flat-footed to you. So you can use your knowledge of the environment around you to take advantage of that.
At 11th level, you're going to get Wild Stride. So natural obstacles that would normally be, you know, difficult movement, they're not difficult for you.
Yep. And along the way, at 15th level, like I said, you get legendary rank in proficiency, but the big thing to pull up is at 17th level is your Masterful Hunter ability, which improves your Hunter's Edge. Your proficiency rank in your class DC goes up to Master. Great, that's fun. You also gain a bonus to Perception to seek your Hunted Prey, and a bonus to Survival if you're a Master in Survival, but also your Hunter's Edge gets an extra bonus. In this case, the Flurry Hunter's Edge changes its penalties to a -2 and -4, or a -1 and a -2 for agile weapons, which is ridiculous. If doing your third attack at just a -2,
it's even obscene.
With an agile, it's you are likely to at that point be getting a lot of crits and stuff. A lot of your attacks actually.
When precision goes up with Masterful Hunter, this lets your precision damage work through multiple attacks. So your first attack was at it, what was with your precision damage, but your second attack at 19th level also gets 2d8 precision damage, and your third attack will get an extra 1d8.
Yeah, and for outwit, your bonus to your skills increases from +2 to +4 if any of them are at master proficiency. And if you are master proficient with your armor, your bonus to AC against your prey goes from +1 to +2. So you are very good at those skills when following your hunted prey.
Lastly, at 19th level, hunt prey is always a free action for you if it's the first action on your turn, which kind of negates favorite enemy a little bit. So you might want to retrain favorite enemy if you have it.
When you hit 20th level, go ahead and retrain that second level feat or whatever it is.
That's right.
That fourth level feat.
Yeah.
One thing I do want to bring up before we go into any class builds, the Advanced Player's Guide did kind of open up the Ranger a bit more to what is in the core rulebook. In the core rulebook, it's just all about combat skills. There's no magic. If you're used to Ranger from other games like Pathfinder 1st Edition, you might remember that Rangers got some casting. They got some spells that they could do that were nature-related, and those did make the comeback in APG. Most of the APG feats are there to give you a focus pool and focus spells like Gravity Weapon or the ability to heal your companion, things like that. So when thinking about builds, don't forget that Rangers have that magical potential if you look into the Advanced Player's Guide.
All right, Luis, that's a lot of hard mechanics and crunch. Mm-hmm. What does a Ranger look like on a character?
Should I go first then?
Yeah, you go first. I'm so excited about my build. I can't wait to talk about it.
I will go first. I will go with whatever ancestry you want. Just know that you're going into a dex-focused ranger rather than a strength-focused ranger, which is, I think, different for me. I usually go dex, or usually go strength instead of dex for these builds, but I went dex this time. And specifically, I'm going into bows, short bow or long bow. I'm going to assume long bow because I'm going to guess that this ranger has the ability to kind of have open areas and use take advantage of long distances and ignore the volley penalty. But if not, short bows are probably still going to be good. Whatever ancestry you want, we are going with the precision hunter's edge, that one that says the first time you hit your hunted prey in a round, you deal an extra 1d8 of damage, and we're going to make your one or two attacks be really big, be really strong every round. At first level, we are going to take Hunted Shot, which lets you shoot two arrows with one action, just two attacks. It's very nice. It's very useful at any time that you feel like you just need to attack multiple times. That's great. You still have to factor in your multiple attack penalty, but it does save you on the action economy if you need to move and then attack twice and then move again or something. Or, for example, you could be hiding, pop out of hiding, shoot twice, and then hide again, and then move to a different hiding spot so you're ready to go for your next round. That's the assumed rotation of actions, assuming you have all the places to hide and stuff. Second level, you can take Hunter's Aim, which lets you spend two actions to focus on your hunted prey and gain a +2 circumstance bonus to your attack roll and ignore any concealed condition, which is very good at guaranteeing a hit or increasing your likelihood of a crit. Great. And if you happen to crit on your first attack against your hunted prey, then that d8 of precision damage gets doubled as well. So extra damage that way. At fourth level, we're going to take Far Shot. That doubles your weapon's range increment, so you can snipe from even further away. At sixth level, though, I'm going to do something I don't like to do too often, but I think works out really well here. I'm going to multi-class. I'm going to take the Rogue Dedication, which gives us thievery and stealth and a couple of other things. Fine. We need that. It is, surprisingly, compared to a lot of other builds, actually kind of a feat tax here because Rangers are all pretty skillful anyway. You probably already have stealth as it is. But moving on, at 8th level, hey, there's a Rogue Dedication feat that we're going to take called Sneak Attacker, which gives us the sneak attack class feature. If someone is flat-footed against you and you're attacking with a ranged weapon, you deal extra precision damage. There's nothing here that specifies that precision damage can't stack together. So I, at this point, am dealing a D8 on my first hit, as well as the extra D6 from the sneak attack, and that D6 is available at all times. And because we're kind of a sneaky sniper type, we're basically doing an extra 1d8 and 1d6 on every sniper shot. And finally, at 10th level, if you are feeling good about your chances about hitting someone, you can take Deadly Aim, which gives you a penalty to your attack roll. But in return, you take a big bonus to your damage. You gain a +4 circumstance bonus to damage on that strike, which, again, if this is going to be a crit, then that's an extra 8 damage, and then that increases eventually at higher level. That is technically an 8th level feat, but there was nothing at 10th level that I thought was screaming for the sniper build, so I just took an 8th level feat, because you can do that. You can take your high level feat and take something lower. And, yeah, all about sneaking and hiding and sniping and absolutely obliterating your hunted prey.
I feel like without even using this specific archetype, you've made a really decent and traditional assassin.
Mm-hmm.
You go find them, you hide, wait for them to pop their head up. Think done, skis.
I think that kind of is the power of the core rulebook.
Yeah. All right. I'm so excited about this build. This is a build that I'm actually going to play first chance I get. Because it's I think it's unique, and I think it's fun. But, Luis, I'm going to get your help a little bit on this real quick, okay? For listeners who aren't very familiar with the lore, and not for Lauren, who is only passingly familiar with it, just for listeners, what is the elevator pitch for Besmara?
Besmara is the goddess of pirates in the ocean, and she is all about going out and kind of claiming what treasure you can find, but also adhering to effectively the pirate's code, though they may be guidelines depending on who you ask. Never betraying your crew and all that, like, and splitting up treasure evenly and stuff, and also never besmirching Besmara, because she is the sea, and if you ever call out to the sea will call back, and you won't come home.
So I have made what I think is a champion of Besmara without using champion, because I don't think it's actually as fitting as it should be for such a goddess. I am the dread pirate, Captain Anastasia Kuznetsov. Yes. So my class is obviously Ranger. The ancestry can actually be whatever we want here, but I actually prefer an elf and a dampier. And the only reason I'm going with these two is because we don't yet have the Book of the Dead, so I could do a full vampire dread pirate like I really want to. Using Ranger, I'm going to be a flurry Ranger. I'm being a strength-focused one because it's going to fit with the nonsense that I've got in store. Because one of the main gimmicks of this is that it's a dual-wielding build with a sword and a spiked gauntlet, which is really just going to be like, you know, like a metal gauntlet with like claws on it, you know. That's my dual wielding, a sword and a claw. And when you have a weapon like a gauntlet that has the free hand trait, your hand is free to do all kinds of shenanigans like trip, like feint, like anything that needs you to have a hand free, you can still do it while you're wielding a claw. And I think it's really cool, right? Like a vampire who, like, will stab you and then, like, slash you across the gut with their hand. Anyway, yeah, I'm really excited about this. I want to play it. But the way the actual build goes is at level one, we're taking Twin Takedown, obviously. Mm-hmm. We're going to spend our ancestry feat on Fangs. Because at level 5, we're going to use those fangs to drink people's blood and get our health back. And at level 9, those fangs cause bleeding every time they hit. Oh, no, it's only on crits. They cause bleeding on crits. Interestingly,
still, I was going to say, still, you probably are likely to crit a lot anyway.
Oh, yeah. Interestingly, as my background, I'm not taking sailor or pirate or anything like that. And this is something I've been wanting to talk about. I recently discovered that if you want to be really good at a job, you actually shouldn't make that your background. Like, this is just a purely mechanical thing. So I want this Dread Pirate, I want this captain to be really good as helming a boat. So I'm taking the background of Wave Touched, which gives me athletic skill, ocean lore, and underwater marauder. And then at second level, I'm using my skill feat to take additional lore sailing. And the reason this is a little bit more advantageous than starting with something like Sailor is because now you don't have to invest your skill increases in it. It will automatically level up with you. It will always be the highest training proficiency level that you can have. So if you want to be a really good sailor, you should take additional lore sailing. If you want to be an incredible criminal, don't take the criminal background. Take something else, but then take the underworld lore, additional lore. Anyway, that's a little aside there. That's how I've been playing with my builds. But at second level, I'm also, you know me, I do like multiclassing. So I'm going down the champion dedication line. And we're going to be tenants of evil, and we're going to be a desecrator.
Mm-hmm.
See, at fourth level, as a vampire, I'm going to need a way to heal myself. So I'm taking the champion's healing touch. So I get a focus spell that I can use to heal myself. We're also taking experience tracker, because once she gets the scent of blood in the water, you can't escape her. That's because she's a ranger. You can't escape a ranger who wants to hunt you, you know? They're going to get you. At sixth level, we're doing terrain expertise for the ocean. We're also taking the champion's reaction of selfish shield. So when she's up in the front lines and somebody thwacks her, well, let me just give myself resistance to that damage every turn. Oh, I'm so excited about this build. Eighth level, we're going to do a basic devotion from the champion, ongoing selfishness, which means I use my champion's reaction on the first attack, and I still get half of that damage reduction on the second and third attack. Very useful. And the last thing we're going to take at 10, we're going to get Divine Ally to make the gauntlet fearsome. And then what we can do is use a +1 striking sword in the main hand, put the doubling rings on that to make the gauntlet +1 striking, and because of the way Blade Ally is written, the Blade Ally doesn't have to be magical. So we can have a non-magical gauntlet with Fearsome that gains magic from the doubling rings. And this lets us now have another and a probably cheap rune on the longsword. So it's very money efficient. It's very action efficient. It's got all the gimmicks in the world since you have a free hand, so you can do everything athletics you want to do. I think this is going to be a really fun build. And first chance I get, I'm going to play it. And first chance I get, I'm going to use Book of the Dead to make it into a full vampire. Definitely not your archetypical ranger, though, huh?
No, but I still like it, and I think that's a testament to the fact that, hey, ranger is broad enough to cover a lot of themes.
And just for fun, I made the mirror version of this, which is like a pirate hunter.
I want to bring an aside here. You mentioned the additional lore stuff. This is not at all related to Ranger, but I want to bring it up because I think might be useful for a lot of home groups. In my game, that lore that you get from your background, that also works like additional lore, and it just scales automatically. I think you should just do that naturally.
I agree with that. And when I run the game for my local group, I'm going to do it too.
I also went one step further, which is probably not recommended for everyone. Keep in mind, it's your game. It won't ruin it, but it will make characters the teensiest bit more powerful. That class, whatever skill that you get trained in from your background, I don't know, athletics, stealth, whatever, etc., also scales up all the way to legendary.
Naturally. I like that. I'm going to think on that.
But that's also because I tend to run games with smaller groups, and I think I need to shore up their power just a little bit to make up for the lack of a player. Anyway, do what you want, but I think that lore skill should just scale automatically like additional lore. it would be very nice, and it feels weird to not have to take a background that doesn't match what you want just for the sake of opening up additional lore.
Well, what's interesting about
do what you want.
What's interesting about that, and the reason I'm probably going to incorporate both of your tweaks into the game I'm about to run, is because when you think about it, in your ABCs of character creation, ancestry, background, class, the A and the C level with you, you know? Throughout the run of your character, those are improving. But the B doesn't. You kind of take background at the beginning, and then it's kind of just forgot about. I think that's a really good way to keep it relevant. You maintain that background.
Yeah, and I get that it's meant to be like, oh, this is a thing you did in the past, and you may not be focused on that anymore. But a lot of the time, you do make characters that do that. So, like, I used to be a sailor. Why wouldn't I still be sailing, especially if I'm, like, playing a pirate in a pirate campaign or something, and getting better at sailing just because it's a thing I used to know, rather than a new skill that I'm picking up now that I'm adventuring, right?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I have some,
anyway.
I have some questions about it, and I'm going to think on those. But what questions do you listeners have for us from Patron Dom? Is there a way to treat a wolf as your mount so Lauren's Queen of Wolves can mount a wolf?
I wish there was. At the very least, nothing comes to mind at the moment. You might be thinking, oh, Luis, there's that goblin feat.
I was thinking
Rough
that.
Rough Rider that says, hey, you gain the ride feat. And you can command an animal to on a goblin dog or a wolf mount and stuff, and select wolf as your animal companion. Thing is, taking wolf as your animal companion doesn't give it a mount, the mount ability. Making it your champion steed ally doesn't give it the mount ability. Champion steed specifically calls out, oh, this doesn't give him the mount special ability. By default, there's nothing out there that does it. If this were my home game, I'd say, yeah, let's just make it a mount. That's fine. You spent a feat to improve your wolf's power. Let's let you ride it, right? But the way I'm reading the rules, from what I can tell, there's no way to do that by default. There might be an item in the future. I don't know, some magical saddle or something you can strap onto your ally, and then they gain the mount ability. But right now, there's nothing for it.
And keep in mind, folks, like, if you really want to play a character who rides a wolf of any race, even not a goblin, and you're in PFS, and because of the rules, you can't do it, there's nothing that says you can't use a different animal, like a pony, and just call it a wolf, right? As long as you're using the mechanics, the theme of it doesn't matter. We're here for fun. This is just advanced board games, right? You're not stealing from anybody. You're not hurting anybody. We're just having a good time.
Indeed. Though, if I recall, Pathfinder Society does have like a no reflavoring rule so as to not cause any confusion at the table. So it might be kind of rough.
Okay, I would cheat on that rule. I would cheat.
You can have a horse companion by the name of Wolf. There we go.
That's okay. from user Arcadian, what are some recommendations for using the Outwit Edge? And I think this is a good question, Luis, because like, how do you use the Outwit Edge? The others are obviously DPS.
I mentioned it earlier, but take advantage of the bonuses to those skills: deception, intimidation, stealth. You will have to rely on skill uses and skill feats to get more out of Outwit than you would just straight up Hunter's Edge with Flurry or Precision. Those are just kind of built in, ready to go. Outwit says, you know, give yourself a bonus to deception. Okay, that means I'm very good at feinting. Use feint to get your opponent flat-footed, or use intimidation to demoralize them and make them, you know, frightened and eventually scared to death, right? Use stealth to hide. And then also there's a bonus to recall knowledge, which can be very helpful, right? Knowing the weakness of an enemy, knowing resistances of an enemy. But also there are some ranger feats, like the Monster Hunter line of feats, that give bonuses on successfully identifying a creature with recall knowledge. So that's what you got to do, is you got to use other stuff that is in the game to supplement Outwit. Otherwise, Outwit is just kind of lackluster as is in terms of combat effectiveness, you have to realize that it's setting you up to go in multiple different directions with how you want with your skills.
You know who would be an outwit ranger? Batman.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I could see that, especially with the bonuses he gets from identifying someone. It's like, oh yeah, I know how to take you out with the right punch or deliver the right gadget to take you out.
The bonus of stealth. If Batman doesn't want to be seen, he's not seen.
Mm-hmm. And he knows how to fight you, so it's harder to land on him. So it all makes sense.
Yeah. From Patron Boyd, what are the pros and cons of ranger builds that use warden spells?
I would say the pros are you get magic. That's cool, especially because they're focus spells. That means you can use them a lot. You can use them to keep your animal companion up and running with healing magic. You can do a lot of cool stuff with it. I think Gravity Weapon is one of those classic spells that everyone loved, and it's fun to see it back. But the Hunter's Luck spell, being able to do the ranger's bramble to create the traps and plants and stuff. There's lots of cool things you can do. Unfortunately, the downside is they are class feats. So if you are wanting to focus on something like, I don't know, multiple attacks with, you know, two weapons, you're going to miss out on things like your... what's that feat's name? You're going to miss out on twin takedown and stuff like that. Or all the cool other feats that enable a lot of cool abilities for the neat stuff that you would get in return of spells. Actually, I think all the warden spells supplement the outwit ranger a lot better, because outwit ranger can take advantage of skill feats more so than class feats to get a lot of the stuff that they want to get going. Right. Extra spells will do good stuff for that.
Really, the main cost is it's just an opportunity cost. You're taking these instead of something else. It's the same con as going with any other thing, twin ace or crossbow ace. Yeah. The only thing that you could consider, though, is that if you're taking anything that has a DC, you might want to have wisdom as not your dump stat. So it's the tiniest bit mad, but not heavily.
A question here from Jason at What Do You Do Pods, who asks, should the ranger get more favored enemy options? Why or why not? Lauren, tell us first off what we get with favored enemy.
Yes.
And then we'll see whether or not we should get more.
Yeah, so my first thought was, no, they don't need more, because they've got all these things. You can choose animals, beasts, dragons, or fungi and plants. And then when we were talking about that, I was like, wait, that's it? Where's Construct? Where's Aberration? Where's Undead? Like, I get that not having Humanoid is in there, because it'd be, like, kind of strong. But, like, or, I don't know, even if it said, like, evil rangers can take a specific ancestry or something. I don't know, that'd be fine. And I get Undead, because Undead would be really, really strong. Because, you know, Undead's, like, one of the hugest classes. Like, every game you're gonna run into some kind of undead, but it has to be there regardless. Like, how do you make a vampire hunter, right? Like, a vampire hunter, like, tracks down vampires and kills them, and they're better against them. How are you not gonna have a vampire hunter? You gotta have that. Yeah, I think we could use some more favorite enemy options. And if a player came to me and said, I want to make a vampire hunter, I would recommend the ranger. And I would say, yeah, I'll let you take favorite enemy vampires or undead or something, you know? Corporeal undead, that's what I would say. Hey, that's a good way to do it. Corporeal or incorporeal undead. That'd be a good way to do it.
So favorite enemy calls out that when you roll initiative and can see an enemy that belongs to that category. So if you see a dragon and your favorite enemy is dragon, you can hunt prey as a free action when you roll initiative. That's it. That's the benefit, right? There's not much else going on with the feat at the moment. So there's only the one favorite enemy feat. It's not like it even builds into anything else. So ultimately what this means is you save one action on the start of a combat if you're facing the right enemy. Hunt Prey does let you open up a lot of stuff, but one action, I don't think it's going to absolutely break the game open. I agree that Undead and Aberration and Constructs and Oozes should be on here. A big problem with First Edition was the way it worked with favorite enemies. It would give you a bonus to damage with that specific enemy type. Here, it's just you Hunt Prey, which can come with a bonus to damage or can come with, you know, bonus or an easier time with your multiple attack penalty. It can come with a lot of different things. But if all of those abilities are balanced, like, why should this really be such a big deal? I understand not doing it for humanoids because you could have an entire campaign that's just fighting humans the whole time, and that means you would get this all the time, but you're probably not going to be fighting dragons all the time, not going to be fighting animals all the time. Breaking undead into corporeal and incorporeal probably gives it enough of a separation that it's not going to happen all the time as well. So, yeah, add more of them. Don't add humanoids, and maybe even consider adding the quote-unquote outsider type. So, like, Celestial is its own thing, Fiend is its own thing, Monitor is its own thing, so on and so forth. But, like, I think it would be just fine. I don't see any problem with it in theory. I guess we'd have to see it in play, but it's just saving one action.
Try it out in your home games. Let us know what you think.
Yeah.
From KD's own Param, how would you build a ranger that feels like a unique character without multi-classing? It feels like one of the classes most prone to falling into a build rut.
So, Lauren's example, Lauren's pirate, if you took out the champion, it's still a pirate, right?
Yeah, and like, it's still doing like the weird claw sword thing.
I think what's happened with Ranger in second edition is there's a lot of baggage with the word Ranger about what it could do, what it can't do. And a lot of associations coming into the game with that baggage. Like, if you played first edition Pathfinder, the Ranger might be something in your mind that it isn't what it is now in PF2. 5e's Ranger is different than the PF2 Ranger. I think making a unique character with the Ranger is a lot easier nowadays just because of the way that the system works and because adding the Hunter's Edge and its current assortment of class feats does give it more of an identity. Knowing its niche in combat as the solo focus combatant does help a lot. They're great for assassins. They're great for, you know, in a way, thinking about like MMO terms, they're great for the tank that like sticks to someone and continues attacking. And I think opening focusing on that the aspect of the way the class plays will help out a lot with making them feel unique. Find a cool way to take advantage of your specific Hunter's Edge, and at that point you kind of have anything you would ever want. You might have to kind of go back and forth. So like, oh, I want this Hunter's Edge. What weapons work well for that? Or I have this weapon. What Hunter's Edge works well for that? But other than that, you can kind of, thanks to the way the system works, kind of build a ranger however you want, the same way you can build a fighter however you want. It just happens to be that it doesn't have as wide of an assortment of feats that are like, oh, if you're fighting with one hand, go with this thing. If you're fighting with two hand, go with this thing. If you're sword and board, go with this thing. So it's just the Hunter's Edge really defines your fighting style.
Yeah, pretty much with a ranger, you can do whatever you want to do with them. But Param, I have to ask you, my friend, why are we doing it without multiclassing? Right? Like, archetypes and dedications are really cool. Like, this isn't the days of 2E or... And this isn't 5e, where if you multi-class, you're kind of harming yourself in your core class. Like, you're if you multi-class out of wizard, you're not going to get to, what, the 9th level spells or something as it used to be? That ain't these days, man. Now, you can put any kind of archetype on your character. You can just slap it on there for some extra flavor. I mean, that'll help you avoid a build rut, you know? In addition to everything that Luis said. Yeah. But, Luis.
Yeah. I was going to say that slapping a multi-class on it is also just as big of a dip as you want it to be. Right? I went into Rogue for one feat to get sneak attack. That's all I really wanted. And it's just to supplement a thing the ranger was already doing. So there's different degrees of multiclassing as well in 2E.
Now, Luis, before we roll survival and start tracking our next episode, I want to ask you a question. Something I forgot about. I wanted to bring this up in the build section. Because I've got this idea in mind. I've got Captain Anastasia Kuznetsov helming the boat. And I am giving her all of her ranger bonuses for navigating wilds and stealth and all of that. Since she's the captain, I'm applying it to the entire boat. How do you feel about that?
As in...
+2 to stealth. If we need to hide the boat, we get +2 on it because she's the captain. Against the hunted prey, which is a merchant ship.
Sure. I think that's fine. I mean, in the end, if you're going to be doing this kind of stuff, you're probably focusing your skill training and skill feats and stuff on this kind of stuff anyway. Might as well lean into it just a little bit more and give you that +2. +2 is a significant bonus, but it's not so big that it's going to make it that you always succeed and, you know, are absolute master that cannot be rivaled.
I am just so excited about, I want to play this so bad, because look at 11th level when you get wild stride and you can ignore most natural difficult terrain. Imagine a storm. A merchant ship is caught in a storm, but Captain Kuznetsov just sails straight through it, unfettered by it because of wild stride. Oh man, this just leans into such cool things. But I better stop talking about it because that's all we have for you today. Make sure to check out the rest of our content on the No Direction Network. If you like this show or any of our other blogs or shows, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/nodirection, because it's the support of our patrons that make this all possible.
Until next time, I'm Luis.
And I'm Lauren.
Thanks for listening to Legend Lore, and as always, it's been legendary.